we'll see how this goes. So some of you know, I have read the Muscle and Shovel book. I know it's been a long time since a lot of you read it and studied through it, but just recently read through it and trying to use it to reach out to a few folks at work. I actually read the second book recently, which kind of got me going on along this line. I don't know if anybody's read it. It's called When the Shovel Breaks. Of course, I recommend both of those books, both real good ones. But the second one kind of got me thinking about the sermon tonight, kind of what I would want to talk about. Had lots of ideas rolling around in my head, trying to figure out how to get them all kind of congealed and determine what I was going to talk about. And kind of in the process of that, you got to understand that when I'm at work, I'm one of those people that I have to work by myself a lot at work, but I hate silence. So when I'm out walking blocks or doing other things, I'm either listening to music or one of the things I kind of got onto is listen to podcasts. I'll listen to podcasts of political stuff, financial things about, you know, being frugal and saving money. And it kind of got into my head, well, I wonder if there was anything good to listen to from the church. So I'd done a couple research and trying to find some, and because I didn't want to get one that wasn't scripturally sound. Didn't have any luck. And then after Michael asked me to do this talk tonight, I did a little more searching and I found one from Bear Valley Preaching School, which I think is a good place. I found a sermon that Neil Pollard did, and this was actually on July 1st, and it was called How Do I Turn One from Error? So that kind of tied in well with the book When the Shovel Breaks, which that's what it's about, is that author, Michael Schenck, you know, leaving Christ and then coming back to him. So what kind of, I thought, well, what better idea could there be? Maybe a little bit of providence was in there. So I said, I'll just steal his idea and use that. And so I'm not going to say this is his complete sermon, but any of the really cool stories or the really good ideas are all from Neil Pollard. So I want to say that up front. I appreciate his work on this. So get to the word here a little bit, and we'll see what Scripture says here. Where we want to start is a couple scriptures in the end of James. James chapter 5, verses 19 through 20. You know, James is a powerful book. It's really about practical things. And he has some practical directions for us there at the end of James. Chapter 5, verse 19 through 20 says, "My brethren, if any among you strays from the truth, and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death, and will cover a multitude of sins." So, we can see a couple things from these verses. We have the possibility of straying, as James talks about here, and we can stray so far that our souls are in jeopardy. The thing we see from these verses is that we can come back, and also we can turn one back. It's a pretty serious matter that James is talking about here. It's not one to be thought lightly of. So, that's kind of what we're going to look at tonight, is what we can do, some practical, gentle things we can do to help maybe influence somebody to come back to the fellowship. One of the articles that Neil mentioned was in the Christian Chronicle, and he said that from 1990 to the year 2015, that the church had lost over 100,000 members, which is just a, you know, monstrous number. I can't even imagine that. Didn't check this out, but he did the math, or somebody did the math in the Christian Chronicle, said that was about 7.8% loss in that time period from 1990 to 2015. Now, no doubt we understand that some of those losses are just from people passing from this life to the next life. But then also we understand church growth hasn't kept up with that. And so some of these folks in this 100,000 are just folks that have left the church. And it's what we're going to talk about tonight. Want to look at 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 20 through 22. And this is kind of talking about our motivation. So 2 Peter 2, verses 20 through 22 says, "For if, after they," people who are Christians, "have escaped the defilements of the world by the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and are overcome, the last state has become worse for them than the first. For it would be better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than, having known it, to turn away from the holy commandment handed on to them. It has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to its own vomit, and a sow after washing returns to wallowing in the mire. So, you know, there's our motivation. If somebody who's been a Christian and has left, you know, the scriptures tell us there in Peter that their state can be worse off than they were before they were Christians. So there's our motivation to help maybe reach out to folks to try to influence them to maybe come back. So where we're going to spend the bulk of our time would be in Galatians tonight. Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through 5 is where we're going to be reading. And what I want to make it clear is that, you know, this isn't a lesson about church discipline. That's the farthest reaches from this lesson tonight. That's going to be a complete last resort. This is just a lesson about practical things. What can we do to help influence folks that have need reached out to? Have some very practical and specific instructions that we can look at, hopefully, and we'll get something from this. And what I want to say, too, is that, you know, these are things that have been kind of eating at me a little bit, so things that I was interested in studying on and thinking about. So, basically, I'm preaching to myself, and you guys just kind of get to listen. So, that's kind of where we're coming from tonight. So, we'll read these verses here in Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. Brethren, if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to another. For each one will bear his own load. And we're not going to look at lots of things in these verses. We're mainly going to be in verses 1 and 2. But just try to look at some practical, specific instructions. And the first thing we look at there in verse 1, he says, brethren, if anyone's caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual. And that's what we look at, you who are spiritual. So we ask, well, who is it who's spiritual? And kind of along the lines of this is, you know, if we're spiritual, we've got to make sure we're on the right path before we want to reach out to somebody and try to help them get back on the right path. So we ask ourselves, well, who is somebody that's spiritual? We can go a chapter back in Galatians, chapter 5, verse 22 through 25, and kind of look at, well, what are the characteristics of somebody who's spiritual? Paul tells the Galatians in chapter 5, verses 23 through 25, that, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. Now those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. So he says, you who are spiritual, do these things. But in the previous chapter, he tells us exactly what these things are going to be like if we're spiritual. He says we need to walk by the Spirit and tells us it's love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. Now, does that mean that we're perfect or we have to be perfect? Doesn't mean that at all. And boy, am I glad of that. But what it does mean is that folks, when they see us, they see how we act, they see how we handle ourselves, that they need to be able to see Christ in us before we reach out to them. So if we reach out to somebody and we're not acting in the correct manner, you know, that could mean that we're hypocritical and we don't want to do those things. Along that line, I think that Jesus probably said it best in Matthew 7, verses 3 through 5. He says, why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but you do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So now it would be easy for us, with those things in mind, to kind of use that as an excuse and say, well, I'm not good enough, so now I'm not going to try to talk to somebody who might need my help. But we don't want to let that get in our way. We need to work on ourselves to be spiritual and then move outward from that. Okay, we'll go back to Galatians 6, verse 1. The next thing he talks about is the spirit of gentleness. He says, brother, if anyone's caught in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness. This means we need to have the correct approach. And I have to admit that way too many times I haven't had the correct approach, not necessarily in this manner, but in manners at work or different things. You know, it's always about that approach. And Paul says here, have a gentle approach. Humility, you know, works into this and plays along with it. If we don't have an improper estimation of our own importance, we can see that we have troubles and we have struggles, and we're going to approach somebody in a better manner, in a manner of gentleness. Gentleness, you know, things that come into play is being considerate of how somebody else feels. You know, be compassionate, understand what they're going through, try to understand what they're going through, and not be harsh or severe. Proverbs 15:1 says that a gentle answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stir up anger. So we can see that definitely don't want to have a harsh approach here if we really want somebody to listen to us in anything, but especially along these lines. Neil had a really good example here, and I'll make sure I give him credit for that. He told a fable about the sun versus the north wind. The sun and the north wind saw this fellow walking along with his coat on, and they were talking about who could get him to take his coat off first. So the north wind says, well, let me have a try at first. So the north wind blows and blows and blows hard. And the fella, instead of losing his coat in the wind, he kind of hunkers down and gets that coat wrapped around him more. And, you know, eventually the north wind blows more, and he zips it up and he puts the hood on, and he just keeps that coat on. And the north wind blows even more, and he just hunkers down and keeps his coat on. The sun says, well, you know, let me try it for a minute. Let me have a go at it. So the sun just kind of gently puts his rays on the back of the fella and just starts warming him up real gentle-like. And pretty quick, well, he's feeling a little warmer. So, of course, he pops his hood off and he unzips the coat a little bit and gets a little more comfortable. And so the sun eases the temperature up a little bit more. And then he decides, well, I can't take my coat. So he takes his coat off and walks along there. But we realize the sun took the gentle approach there to it, instead of how the north wind kind of just went at it all at once. Another good example is when Paul was talking to the Thessalonians. He reminded the Thessalonians of how gentle he was when he was with them, and he described it this way in 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 7. He says it was just like he was as gentle to them as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own. And I know we can all relate to that picture. You know, when a nursing mother has that baby, it's a calm situation. She wants the best for her baby. It's calming, it's soothing, and it's just a neat picture there that Paul painted for them. And that's how Paul says we want to handle people who we're reaching out to. Okay, the next thing is still in verse 1, a spirit of introspection. Paul says that you are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. So each one looking to yourself. So when I want to go talk to somebody, I need to look into myself and decide how I would want to be reached out to. So how do I want to somebody to come talk to me? And that made me think about Matthew 7, verse 12. Matthew 7, verse 12 says, in everything, therefore, treat people the same way you want them to treat you. For this is the law and the prophets. And this is a direct quote from Neil. He said that, you know, when we're in this situation, wanting to talk to somebody who we think is needs reaching out to, he said that we are people who sin walking in the light. And we realize that. We all sin. We all fall short. We are people who sin walking in the light, trying to reach out to a person who sins that is walking in darkness. So we all have sin. We all fall short. And we're just trying to help somebody out. So we're going to spend the bulk of our time this evening talking about practical ways that we can help. So the fourth point here comes out of verse 2. He says we need to bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. So bearing one another's burdens, finding practical ways that we can look and see if we can help some folks out. You know, people fall away different reasons. They generally kind of let the cares of life sometimes just take over them, and we don't know if it might be marital problems or problems with children in the home. Maybe it's work or financial problems, health problems, just any number of things. Could be peer pressure that are kind of people let get in the way of what they should be doing. And David says it this way in Psalms 38 verse 4. He says, "For my iniquities are gone over my head. As a heavy burden, they weigh too much for me." So things we'll be talking about here is just helping us identify people's burdens and see if we can't help them bear their burden a little bit, like Paul talks to the Galatians here. But to do that, we have to learn about what their trouble is. We have to take opportunities to figure out what their struggle is so that we can maybe reach out to them and help them. And these are the things we'll talk about here. And the first one is just how we can listen, you know, and that's something I have to admit I'm not very good at. But listening it's a very treasured talent. Somebody who's a good listener, they can just soak everything in that somebody is talking to them about. And sometimes when people are having struggles, all they need is somebody to listen to them. They know the solution, but they don't have the solution until they start talking to somebody about it. Maybe this has happened to you before. You know, either you're talking to somebody or they're talking to you about a struggle you're having, and once you air it out and you start talking about it, the solution comes to you. And you say, "Oh, thanks for listening to me." And they're going, "Well, I really didn't do anything, but just they did listen." And so we can listen. We can let people air out their troubles. Something I thought of here is we don't want to be like Job's friends. You know, we've all read through the book of Job, and Job's friends were always quick to want to say, "Well, what about this, Job? You've done this," or you know, pointing out his weaknesses and his struggles, and we definitely don't want to do that. But listening will let us hopefully try to figure out these people's needs, whoever they might be. Now, we don't want to be nosy about it, but we do want to listen well enough and talk to them enough so that we can figure out what they might need. And then the second thing we'll talk about is maybe we can connect folks we're reaching out to with some help. Maybe they need to talk to the preacher. Maybe they need to talk to the elders. Or maybe they need to come to a class. Maybe there's a specific book that we've read that we know might help them. So we can connect them with the help that they might need. The third thing is maybe we can connect them with the proper scriptures that help encourage them. You know, if we're in the Bible and we know scriptures, when we encounter the struggle, we've listened to them already and we see what their struggle is, maybe we can help point them in the right direction to some scriptures that would help encourage them and help point them in the right direction. Fourth thing is that maybe we can pledge to walk with them. And I know that sounds a little bit, well, what do you mean walk with them? There's a guy I listen to on the radio some, and my wife would tell you that I listen to him too much. He kind of has a program where people call in and he gives them financial advice. And though I do not agree with anything he has to say about religion, he bases his life on religion. I don't agree with anything there, but I can tell by listening to him, he's a great listener. He is a very loving individual. And from time to time, he used the term, "I'll walk with you in this." And I think what he means by that is how I've heard him over the lots of calls I've listened to him take from people is he's willing to help them. He says, "You call me back if there's anything you need." He's willing to give them free books. He's willing to give them free advice there on the radio. He gives them free subscriptions to the things that a lot of people charge for. Just willing to spend his time with them, and he always says, "Look, if there's something else you need, you get back with us." I even heard him one time offer to buy airplane tickets and fly this couple to their offices in Tennessee to spend time with them to help them with a struggle they were having. But, you know, so if we can walk with somebody, what does that mean? Well, if we're going to direct them to maybe talk to the elders if they need some help there, we can go with them. You know, we don't have to let them go alone. We can walk with them to go to the elders. Or maybe there's somebody who's been struggling in their life and they feel strongly about the fact that they need to come forward and confess their sins and have a public display of that and forgiveness. We can come forward with them. We can tell them, "Hey, I'll hold your hand. I'll put my arm around you. I'll stand right there next to you. Whatever you need." maybe it's not something public like that. Maybe it's just being an accountability coach where you two work together, where we can work together and kind of make sure that if they're struggling with having enough time in the Bible or struggling with praying enough, talk to each other and ask each other, how are you doing on that? Are you making progress there? Walking with them can also mean we can study with them. We can open the scriptures with them. And a big thing we definitely don't want to leave out is that we can pray with them and we can pray for them. One of the things that I've been convicted of is that, you know, a lot of times we pray for people, but sometimes if you let them know you're praying for them, that means a whole lot to them. If you let them know that you're praying for them. Okay, the fifth thing that we can do in items of practicality, how we can help people, is make sure we act with humility. And we talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, how can practically we do that? And one of the things that we can do is we can point out our own weaknesses or give examples in our own lives of how we've dealt with problems and let them see that maybe that would be a good solution for them. We can use our own weaknesses to help coach them to deal with their problems. And the last thing we'll talk about as far as practical ways is we need to realize our own limits. You know, we need to do everything we can do and we need to work hard, but we have to realize that there may be a time where we can't do as much as we need to do. We can help folks, but eventually they're going to have to make the decision to do some work on their own. And you know, at that point, you know, we can't feel guilty about it. We have to do as much as we can do, but not have that guilt overcome us. We can still, at that point, we can still pray for them, though. We need to be able to look in the mirror and say, you know, I've done what I could for those folks who have erred, who have left the church. And I'm here to tell you tonight, I haven't done what I can. So I'm kind of, as I told you, these are things that I've been convicted about, and I'm just starting my journey, trying to see if there's people that I can reach out to. So we can, hopefully, walk in this together, and hopefully we can strengthen and encourage each other. 2 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11 says that we can encourage one another and we could build one another up. So we need to try to do that in this and in all things. So, ask tonight, you know, is there someone that I can reach out to? Is there someone that you can reach out to? Think of Hebrews 9, verse 27 says, it's appointed for men to die once, and then after that, the judgment. That's kind of it's a sobering thought to think about, though. You know, we are always concerned about, and as we should be concerned about, people's physical affairs, you know, how their health and how they're doing when folks are grieving for lost loved ones, and we always need to be concerned about those things. But we also have to keep in mind this life isn't the only thing. We've got life beyond this life, and we will be judged one day. We're going to face judgment. Everybody will face judgment. And then, so those folks that we're thinking about, where will they be on that day? And we need to keep that sobering thought in mind. I'll end with a story. It's kind of a long story, but I think it's a good one. Again, this is from Neil. He told a story of a guy named Sadhu Singh. At least I think that was the guy's name, as best I could get it. If I see something written, I can really remember it. But this fellow, Sadhu, he was a Hindu, converted to Christianity. And the story goes that he was walking along in the Himalayas with a monk. And it was in the wintertime, it was brutally cold, snow on the ground, and they were trying to get back to the pagoda before nightfall. The monk reminded him, look, if we don't get back before nightfall, it's a great good possibility that we're going to freeze to death. So they come along this path, and on the one side there's this deep crevice, and they hear somebody's crying out, like maybe they had fallen and hurt themselves or something. And the monk says, you know, that fella, he's met his fate, let him, that's between him and God, we've got to leave him, we've got to get back before we freeze to death. And Sadhu says, I can't do that, you know, I'm going to go help this fella. So the monk goes on, and Sadhu decides he's going to climb down in there. He gets down in there and finds the gentleman. He's broken his leg, so he puts him on his back, and he starts the journey back up to the path, you know. And it's a hard journey. It's tough. The guy's heavy. By the time he gets back to the top, he's sweaty. He's exhausted. He's fatigued. It's closer to dark now, of course, but he's alive. the gentleman he brought up out of that, pit is alive. Get back up to the path, and they continue on, try to get back to the pagoda before nightfall. As he gets to the point, he can just see the lights of the pagoda in the pathway there, and he comes along something in the pathway, and he stumbles and almost falls. So he decides to dust off what's there, and he realizes that that monk that had left him had frozen to death. Whether this is a true story or not, I'm not sure. He told us a true story, but that monk had frozen to death. And then years later, Sadhu was in a class, and somebody asked him, you know, what's the toughest thing in life? What is the absolute toughest thing in life? And Sadhu said, the toughest thing in life is to not have a burden to bear. He had that gentleman as a burden, and the toughest thing, he said, is to not have a burden to bear. And, you know, we have each other as a burden. If we can't help each other out, you know, basically, we can't help bear each other's burdens. And that's what Paul says here in Galatians 6, is that we need to bear each other's burdens. So, let's start thinking about tonight who it is that we can help and how we can help them. We've got a directory, you know. It's not new, but we do have a directory. We can look through it. We can see. Each one of us here has different levels of relationships with people. Maybe we already have a strong relationship with somebody that needs some help. We can use that. Maybe somebody that we don't know that well, we can develop a relationship with so that we can help them. We can look around tonight, and I know this is an odd day where there's a lot of empty pews, you know. We can look around at the pews and think of people that have sat around us before, and we can use that as a tool. Well, maybe there's somebody here tonight who already knows they need something. In a minute, we're going to sing the invitation song. So if somebody is here tonight and already realizes they need some help, we, you know, invite them to come forward. If there's anybody here who needs anything at all, as we sing the invitation song, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.
Hark the gentle voice of Jesus.